A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 453. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Quatermass at the movies. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Roughly once a year, we like to look at a spin-off from a British science fiction television show into another medium. In this case, the medium is film, and we are looking at Professor Quatermass in the 3 Hammer Films adaptations of the 1950s BBC television serials. So we have The Quatermass Experiment from 1955, Quatermass 2 from 1957, and Quatermass and the Pit from 1967. And there are different titles for those for the American releases, and we'll talk about those as we go too. And I will note that we are not covering Quatermass the Conclusion, which did have a small theatrical release in 1979, but that's separate from this, and we're talking about the 3 Hammer films here.
We are indeed getting a chance to see how these Hammer horror versions of the TV show built on the success of the TV show and provided some very exciting trips to the cinema for audiences at the time, and I have to say quite exciting for me right now to be talking about Quatermass again.
Absolutely lovely.
Let us start with a quick Quatermass primer. Possibly unnecessary, but here we go. Nigel Neal and Rudolf Cartier created it in 1953. The original Quatermass television shows, I'm going to say, Brian, they practically invented the idea of television that was a must-watch, that people could not miss the next episode. And wasn't the first British television science fiction program, but it is one of the very earliest that probably did more to cement the genre than anything else, I'm going to say.
Yes, it's maybe the first that's well remembered and that people still talk about and remembered those original broadcasts many years later. So, those original broadcasts. The Quatermass Experiment was on the BBC in 1953 and starred Reginald Tate as Professor Quatermass, and Quatermass 2 followed it a couple years later in 1955, this time with John Robinson taking on the role of Quatermass. Reginald Tate had passed away by then. And then in 1958, and going a little bit over into 1959, Quatermass and the Pit, which starred André Morel in the title role. And Quatermass would return to television, but the next time it was on ITV in a serial simply called Quatermass, and that was in 1979, and it starred John Mills.
And of course, you'll be familiar with the fact that the BBC redid it. They did a live-to-camera remake of the Quatermass Experiment in 2005 with Jason Fleming getting a chance to play Professor Quatermass. We'll come back to that version possibly along the way just to mention it, but yeah, a live-action sweaty performance for the actors.
Yes, that's right, and there were indeed a number of different actors taking on that role on television, and we discussed Quatermass in detail way back in British Invaders 7 and 8 in 2007, and we've discussed it a little bit on a couple of anniversaries as well. But this time, we're talking about the Hammer film adaptations.
We are indeed. So let us punch your ticket and head to the cinema in 1955 for the Quatermass Experiment, also known in America as The Creeping Unknown. This is a black and white movie from 1955. And we should obviously say that in 1953, the Quatermass Experiment on television, a huge hit for the BBC. The Hammer horror film producer, Anthony Hines, in fact, had contacted the BBC 2 days, literally after last episode aired, to inquire about the film rights. I think he spotted that this was very successful and could make an interesting movie.
That tells you something about how big and how different this was when it came out.
Interestingly, of course, Nigel Neal was also having his own discussions with other film companies, not Hammer, about a version of his film, of his TV show. But then, of course, Hammer reached an agreement with the BBC, which actually didn't really do Nigel Neal any favours, because at the time, he received no extra money if his script was sold to film. He was very much on a sort of work-for-hire agreement with the BBC. This would become a subject of some disagreement between him and the BBC in future years until they finally gave him a payment, an ex gratia payment in 1967, to cover some of the fact that he hadn't made any money at the films.
Yes, and that did seem to settle things, and he would be more willing to work with the BBC later on. The Quatermass Experiment was the first of the sort of new line of horror films from Hammer Studios, which had mostly been doing second feature type films that British cinemas would need to pair with American movies and so on, which the regulations at the time, they had to show something British in those apparently. But this was sort of stepping out into a bigger thing for Hammer Films, and they had the adaptation of the BBC serial written by Robert Landau with additional rewrites by Val Guest, who was the director for the production. They also dropped the initial E from the word experiment, so it's experiment starting with a capital X, and that was because Hammer wanted to promote that they were releasing this on an X certificate, so X-rated film, if you like. That was a relatively new thing, that horror films could do this and be able to show a little bit more. That was something new that was introduced in 1953, and they were using it here in 55.
Interesting stuff. Now, Hammer felt that they needed an American star for the film in order to sell the rights in the US. So they brought in Hollywood tough guy actor Brian Donlevy to play Professor Quatermass. And we might get to talking about his performance in our next episode, probably, Brian. He was an interesting character, Brian Donlevy. As I say, he played sort of tough police chiefs and gangster types in American films. He, at the time, Val Guest, the director, has said that, you know, Brian Donlevy was having a few problems with alcohol at the time. But he always, Val Guest said he remembered that he was always very professional. He was always on time. He always knew his lines. He didn't seem to have a much wider idea of exactly what the film was about, or perhaps a bit more idea about the character of Quatermass. But in terms of sort of like day-to-day turning up, hitting his mark, knowing his lines, he was good at that, it seems.
That's interesting, yeah.
They famously changed the ending. It does happen in Westminster Abbey, as in the TV show, but this time Quatermass uses a sort of science tech. He uses electricity to kill the alien creature instead of appealing to the last vestiges of humanity inside it. So the ending is changed and probably, I suppose, pumped up into a more typical science fiction horror film ending.
Yes, I think that, and we'll talk more about this, but I think that did change the production quite a bit and was one of the things that steered it more in the direction of being a sort of monster movie.
Indeed. I'll just mention, we'll mention a couple of other actors in this film version. Jack Warner plays the inspector, police inspector Lomax. Jack Warner, best known for the TV show he was just about to start when this film came out, which was, of course, the title character in the long-running police show Dixon of Dock Green. And I'll just very quickly mention that Jack Warner, probably already too old to be a police officer when he started filming Dixon of Dock Green. But that's another story, Brian.
Yes. As the years went on, Dixon of Dock Green became known for having a rather elderly police character in the lead.
Indeed.
Richard Wordsworth played the doomed astronaut Victor Caroon, who is quite central to the story. And the film was shot at Hammer's now famous Bray Studios, with exteriors at Chessington Zoo and some nighttime London exteriors as well. The budget for the whole film was £42,000, which was low even for a Hammer production at that point.
Not a lot of money, it seems.
No. The Quatermass Experiment was released on August 25th, 1955. In the UK.
And it was also sold to United Artists for US distribution, where it was known as we've said, The Creeping Unknown. And even just the sale of the rights to America brought in £125,000 for Hammer. And that was on top of its already huge UK box office success, because it was a big box office success. So this made a lot of money for Hammer, and perhaps inevitably, when Quatermass 2 started to broadcast on the BBC in October of the same year, 1955, well, I guess Hammer were thinking a sequel film version was inevitable.
Yes, and it must have been around then that it was becoming very clear that Quatermass was a big deal. This was something that people knew and people would watch, whether it was on film or television. Quatermass 2 was from 1957, known as Enemy from Space. This was also a black and white production. So it was based on the Quatermass 2 serial from the BBC, which was from a couple years earlier, October and November 1955. And that was a hit on the BBC. And Hammer was so interested that they had bought the film rights even before the BBC version had broadcast. And remember, these were live broadcasts. So the BBC production hadn't even been completed when Hammer signed for the film rights. And this time, Nigel Neal persuaded the BBC to allow him to be involved in the film production.
And in fact, he co-wrote the screenplay for this one with Hammer producer Anthony Hines, we've already mentioned. So I guess he did get some Hammer money. He must have been paid for this one. And perhaps not surprisingly, Nigel Neal's screenplay, probably because he was used to the 6-episode format, it was a bit long for a film. So once again, Val Guest, who's very capable at this sort of thing, did rewrites and cut it down to a more sort of film length for the actual production. And Brian Donlevy flew back in again to play Quatermass, making him the only actor to have played Professor Quatermass on screen twice.
Yes.
You're right. Well aware that some people have done it in different formats, in different media.
Yeah, it's also worth noting when you talk about cutting the script down, these were not long movies. These first couple are less than an hour and a half, and I'm sure there were limitations that they couldn't make it too long.
Indeed.
This time, John Longdon was playing Inspector Lomax, and Sid James played a journalist called Jimmy Hall. At the time, James was known for sort of minor tough guy roles in films, so that gives you a bit of a feel for the types of people they were casting in these films.
Sid James also just about to become Sid James in British film and television, starting his radio work with Tony Hancock, and he will go on to the Carry On films and become the more familiar comic character that we know him for over here. You can see a little flash of that in his performance here as the journalist.
But I'm sure that changed everything for him once Carry On was a thing.
Indeed.
I'll note, when we mention that journalist role, Roger Delgado, favorite of ours, and he would play the original version of the Master on Doctor Who. He played the journalist, different name, but basically the same character, in the television serial of Quatermass 2. So they had Sid James taking over that role from Roger Delgado.
We love Roger Delgado.
Yes. Quatermass 2 was filmed at Bray and the Shellhaven Oil Refinery, which had also been used in the television version. And it was also done at the Newtown development of Hemel Hempstead, which was still under construction at that point.
This time, if you listen to the commentary track, and some of these Val Guest Brian Donlevy stories come from the Val Guest commentaries, this time they noticed there was some outside filming, obviously, and they managed to move out of studios and sets and did some outside filming, which caused a few problems with the wind lifting Brian Donlevy's hairpiece and it flapping about a bit. Val Guest tells this in a rather amusing fashion on the commentary, Brian.
Yeah, apparently Donlevy was pretty open about using a toupee in his film work. It's something he had to do.
Yeah. We got an increased budget this time, £92,000, of which United Artists contributed £64,000, as well as they were flying Brian Donlevy backwards and forwards from the US to the UK and paying his own £25,000 fee. So the budget went up. United Artists stepped in and paid for quite a bit of it. So I guess it was the first film must have been a big hit for them as well, Brian.
Yes, I think so. Quatermass 2 was released on May 24th, 1957 in the UK, again with that X certificate, which was their rating. And it was released in the US as Enemy from Space.
And was another box office success, particularly for Hammer here in the UK. Perhaps not as well reviewed as the first one, but you know, it did do very well for them. It made them money. Hammer had made these two Quatermass movies, but Hammer also released another film in May 1957. That film was their version of Frankenstein, called The Curse of Frankenstein, starring, of course, Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, who I think we're going to say are British Invaders Hall of Famers, Brian.
Yes, and as Hammer actors, they were a classic pair who would play across from each other many times.
And I think it's fair to say that was the bigger of the two for Hammer. That was the bigger box office success, and then perhaps led Hammer to their sort of gothic horror adaptations for the next 10 years before they'd come back to Quatermass, as we'll get to in our next episode. But in terms of Hammer becoming a horror studio, Quatermass started it.
Yes, it did. And it was, as you say, it would be another 10 years to 1967 before they would come back to Hammer.
So let's jump to our availability, which we're going to put here at the end of the first episode, as usual. In Region 2, there are so many ways to watch the Hammer Quatermass films. So I'm going to very quickly summarize and say that all three of them are on DVD, they're all on Blu-ray, and they're all streaming over here at the moment, mostly free with ads on various of the free streaming services like Freevee, BritBox, and Studio Canal. We keep mentioning this, DVDs are becoming harder to get hold of and getting more expensive proportionally, but the Blu-rays are fantastic. The Blu-rays have lots of extra features. There are commentaries on these first two films by Val Guest and by Nigel Neal on Quatermass 2 and later on Quatermass and the Pit. There's extra features, there's interviews with notable fans, including Kim Newman, John Carpenter, Julian Glover and Mark Gatiss. You know, Julian Glover and Mark Gatiss also very popular here on British Invaders. And they're all available to rent the DVD versions from cinemaparadiso.co.uk. And I'll just say that the original TV Quatermass collection, which is all the surviving episodes from the three original serials, is still available on a highly recommended DVD for £12 over here. We'll talk about the other film perhaps in our next episode. So, in summary, lots of ways to watch the Quatermass Hammers here in the UK, Brian. In the US and North America?
Yes, in North America, Shout Factory has Blu-ray releases of the three Quatermass Hammer films and the other film that you're mentioning as well. They range from about $17 to $23 US or $30 to $30. $38 Canadian, and they do use the original UK Quatermass titles, not the US titles. Some of those have lots of extras listed on the Amazon listings and others don't, so I don't know if all four of them have lots of extras or if it's only a couple of them, but some of them certainly do. There are also Region 1 DVDs around, but most of those are older and out of print and tend to be a little expensive. As far as streaming goes, Quatermass 2 is available to stream on Tubi, which is a streaming service in the US and Canada that has ads. It's free. The other films are not available streaming. Shout Factory, who releases those Blu-rays, they do have a streaming service, but I could not find any of these films on that streaming service.
Okay, at least there are some options to watch it, to watch all three of the films on both sides of the pond.
Yes, there are definitely options.
So, next time, in our next episode, we're going to be talking about Quatermass and the Pit, obviously, from 1967. We are going to get to the mysterious other non-Quatermass movie that almost never was. So some other films, or at least two other films, to talk about next time, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And we also will talk about some of the highlights of the films, get into some of our own thoughts, and talk about what we would recommend to our listeners. Until then, you can find all of our Quatermass coverage and all of our past episodes, over 450 of them, at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join in on some conversations with us. Or you can find us on Instagram and on Threads. On those two platforms, we are at British_Invaders_podcast.
You can also find British Invaders at VogNetwork.com. That is the Voice of Geeks platform, network of podcasts, of gaming content, of live streaming, other geek-related stuff. The Voice of Geeks at VogNetwork.com.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Thank you very much indeed. Until next time, Eamon in England also signing off.